your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
I'm giving up. I don't know where you are. Where are you? All when black clouds come over me, they darken my skies. It's how I look at things to give me a new high.
Do you or someone you know suffer from addiction? While many of us have an addiction to something, we have few places to turn to get the help we need. Welcome to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. Learning about addiction and that you are not alone is the first step in getting things back on track. Our show will bring you to that first step and much more. Now, here is Rebecca Bullion.
Listening audience, this is Rebecca Bullion, and I'm so excited to be here today. Our guest today on Addiction in America is Dr. Kathy Rito, and she is the director of the Dual Diagnosis Program for Eating Disorder and Substance Abuse at Pine Grove Treatment Center in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Welcome, Dr. Rito.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, I am so excited about the work that you are doing at Pine Grove, and I thought we could start out by just letting you tell me a little bit about that and, you know, what you're doing there.
Oh, I'd love to, because we're excited about the work that we're doing here as well. Well, we are primarily a chemical dependence unit, a 90-day residence program for chemical dependence. And what we found over the years is that there's a kind of a growing subgroup of women that struggle with chemical dependency issues that also have a diagnosis of an eating disorder. So we have developed this really highly specialized tract within our substance abuse center for those particular women.
Oh, wow. So do you think that eating disorders are on the rise?
You know what? It's hard to say. I think everything's on the rise, sadly. I think we're, especially in treatment centers, we're seeing more and more of everything. I think that there's a component where they've become much more visible and talked about so that we hear about them more. There's also now generations of young women who have been influenced by all sorts of issues in our culture and society. And so I do think we see more and more eating disorders and more complicated eating disorders.
I just have so much compassion for these women and the media and what's going on with that and the pressure. How are people more complex? What is it about eating disorder that's more complex now?
You know, I see it both with chemical dependence as well as eating disorders. It used to be in days gone by where, you know, when I was in private practice, someone would show up in my office and they would have bulimia, for example. And not a whole lot of other things may be going on except the bulimia. And could easily be treated in an outpatient way with outpatient therapy. Now, especially in a residential treatment program, we see people that present with many more issues, mood disorders, anxiety disorders, trauma-related issues, PTSD, as well as substance abuse. So people present seem to have much more complicated profiles.
Do you think that the amount of pain and the need to medicate emotions is proportionate to having like a sort of two addictions or a dual diagnosis?
Well, I think that if you've got a lot of pain in your world, you're going to just try everything you can to soothe that pain. And so I think that does increase the chances that you'll just use more things in an attempt to do that.
Do you work with people looking at them as having like a cross addiction, or you know, two things going on at once, and you know, how is that? That's what makes them more complex, I know. But do you treat both things at the same time?
We do, and because they are so complex, and you know, you asked a great question: are they just two faces of addiction, or are they really two separate entities? And we're doing a lot of work with that, because here's the crazy thing is, brain-wise, they cross over many common pathways. So if you've got both disorders, they kind of mutually reinforce each other. And so treating them, you have to treat them at the same time. Otherwise, one just kind of hangs while the other one's treated, and then the other one kicks up when the other one kind of is at bay. So it really presents for really complicated clinical treatment.
Yes, I can imagine that, you know, it's you think you've got one in control, and
right.
then this other one kicks up, and you have to deal with them at the same time.
Right.
That only makes sense.
Right.
You know, in one of your recent presentations, I think you mentioned something about clients that have attachment issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I thought was interesting, the way you phrased it, was that clients with attachment issues have an opportunity for a missed experience.
Exactly.
With drug or food abuse. How does that work?
Well, you know what, when I went through all the research, because, you know, back to your first question, there has been and always is some controversy in the field whether an eating disorder is another face of addiction. For example, if you have an alcohol addiction and a drug addiction, that really is pretty much comes under chemical dependency. An eating disorder isn't classified that way. But so when I was looking through all the research, some types of research that support a connection between an eating disorder and an addiction comes from these neuroimaging kind of techniques. So what those show is that when you show somebody a picture of a drug or a palatable food, the similar area of the brain lights up. And so based on the fact that similar areas, as we say, light up, people can deduce that there's a connection between those two. But then when I was picking around in some other areas, and the area that I'm talking about mostly is the reward center of the brain, that when you show a mother a picture of her infant and mother gazes at her infant, that same area of the brain lights up, the reward
wow.
center. So that's what got me thinking in terms of, you know, this is, and that gaze where the mother looks at her infant and that reward center lights up, that is reflective of a really strong attachment.
Yeah.
So are these people really seeking that missed experience of attachment they may not have had in their early life? And that's just one more alternative explanation for why this connection is so complicated.
Well, I know that when I look at my kids, that reward center is directly tied to the heart, and I think that is very good thing to say, missed experience of attachment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's the role of feelings like anger, sadness, loneliness in an eating disorder or chemical abuse addiction?
You know what? I think both an eating disorder and a chemical addiction can be used to sort of manage those feelings. For example, if a woman doesn't believe she has the right to her own anger, she may not be able to voice that or experience that in a way that feels safe and productive. Her eating disorder may allow her to manage that in a way that is kind of off the table. For example, if she throws up, that may be a way that she gives voice to her anger or experiences her anger in a way that's so disguised, nobody's going to criticize her for it. Likewise, a substance abuse may help just obliterate those feelings.
I'm going to ask you a complicated question next.
Go ahead.
It seems like a client would come in, you'd be working on educating them about their addiction and then doing some of the skill building work. What is, and I want to talk about maybe what some of the skills are in a minute, but we know that anger is tied to some issues a lot from the past.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody cannot remember their past, they can't remember their childhood, how do you handle that?
You know, know what? Because the feeling is always a valid feeling. So my belief is, and you know, if you remember years ago in the psychology world, there was a lot of issues with repressed memories and false memories. Because a lot of people were thinking, unless you remember, you can't really work with it. We've grown so much in our field that you don't really have to remember to have the symptoms that you have. Many, many times when you're working with those symptoms in a really deep and reflective way, a person will recall aspects of their early experiences. Maybe not in a complete biographical way like watching a movie, but will remember feelings and thoughts and sensations that were associated with events.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that makes it a lot easier than having to remember things you can't remember.
Absolutely. And actually in treatment, some of the problem when the goal is to remember, again, when the goal is to remember things, you really run the risk of creating false memories. We have fabulous new techniques out there. Sensory motor psychotherapy that was developed by Pat Ogden, of course EMDR with Francine Shapiro, that you don't need the memory in order to work with the symptoms or the trauma.
Could you give me just a real brief synopsis of the sensory motor treatment you just mentioned?
Oh, it is fabulous. I was introduced to sensory motor psychotherapy several years ago when I was struggling working with the somatic experiences of my clients with eating disorders and wasn't really able to get at them in a way that I thought was productive. And I heard Pat Ogden talk at a conference, and it's like, that's the missing piece for me. So she really has developed this wonderful approach to treatment that integrates somatic experiences in conjunction with thoughts and feelings and all your other perceptions.
Oh, that's something new to learn. You know, I've got EMDR training, and I understand that, but you know, some of these other ones, I'm fascinated with the new cutting-edge treatments. We said this is one of the cutting-edge treatments that you do at Pine Grove?
You know what? I'm trained in sensory motor psychotherapy, so certainly we use aspects of that. All my therapists are trained in EMDR, and that becomes a really important piece when we're working with trauma issues. We also use that for urge reduction in both our eating disorder and our substance abuse women. And we also use it specifically with eating disorders when we're working with trigger or fear foods. Also, it's an EMDR approach to therapy is really a good therapy when people don't have words for their traumas or their experiences. And so, or people have told their story so many times, it just is a story, and the emotions and the feelings are disconnected from that story.
I understand. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, we are going to go to break.
Okay.
And then I want to continue right where we are here when we come back from break. So, callers, if you want to call in, ask any questions of Dr. Rito or myself, the number is 1-866-472-5792. This is Rebecca with Addiction in America.
Sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Leadership is a destination, but how do you get there? More importantly, how do you maximize your power and influence and develop more leaders in your organization? Learn from proven leaders and proven practices. Join Drs. Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler for Leadership Development News. This program will help you develop the next leaders in your organization, balance your work life, manage your boss, and manage yourself. We'll feature cutting-edge interviews with industry experts and authors. Leadership Development News, every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, thanks for joining back in. This is Rebecca, and I'm talking to Dr. Kathy Rito of Pine Grove today, and she is the director of the Dual Diagnosis, Eating Disorder, and Chemical Dependency Women's Program. And so we were just talking about skill building and self-soothing and, you know, what are some of the skills that people can use when they're trying to manage both of these addictions at the same time. Dr. Rito?
Well, you know, we start with the basics. In terms of, you know, some of our women don't even know how to take a deep breath and ground themselves in the moment. So sometimes we start with techniques that are as simple and complicated as breathing. You know, that breathing in and having your diaphragm fill and breathing out in a regular kind of way can be extremely calming and self-soothing. Some of my women breathe in as far as their breast line. They can't get their breath any further than that. Some women actually demonstrate paradoxical breathing. When you breathe in and the chest sinks in instead of expands, and when they breathe out, their chest expands instead of kind of deflates. So breathing in and of itself can be a great grounding technique, just like learning to stand and feel the earth under your feet and kind of stand in a way where your body feels integrated and not cut off, where your legs and your arms kind of feel like dangling appendages. So to have your energy kind of feel your psychic energy kind of go through your body and feel really grounded to the earth, those can be really helpful grounding and soothing techniques.
And breathing is always accessible. You know, it's something you could do in the moment and focus
on
it.
But it's really one of those things that it sounds really easy, but if your breathing is off, it can be a difficult skill to learn and implement when in those times of high stress. And that's the real trick. How do you implement those things when you're in a high state of high arousal and when you're high stress? One of the things that we've started to use here at the Women's Center is a form of biofeedback that looks at heart rate variability. And it's a really exciting new technique, and it's easy to implement. But what that really means is that we found over time that respirations affect directly the SA node of the heart, and that the heart sends more signals to the brain than the brain sends to the heart. And if your breathing regulates that part of the heart, then that in turn helps regulate your sympathetic and your parasympathetic system. And those are fancy words for your sympathetic system is the fight or flight system. That's what gets you going. That's going to make you run out of a fire. That system is also overdeveloped in women who have histories of trauma because they're always in a state of hyperarousal. Likewise, the other system, the parasympathetic system, is the calm you down system. It's the system that once you're up, you can initiate that deep breath and come back down to baseline. In a lot of our women, those systems are out of balance, and they can't bring themselves back down once they're up, and they can't bring themselves up if they get too far down. So then they've had to, over time, use different techniques like cutting or throwing up or any kind of drug or alcohol that would counter each one of those states.
Is cutting, I guess somebody would be really overwhelmed if they got to the point that they were cutting, and you know, I always think of that as a sign of trauma. What is going on chemically in the brain and in the parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system when someone cuts?
You know, and in that moment of cutting, I can't really speak to that, but my hunch would be that it is part of this dysregulated arousal system where the person can't get out of a hyperarousal state. They can't get them to feel better. Likewise, it may be if someone is highly dissociated, and that the dissociative states are if I feel disconnected from my body, disconnected to my surround. It's that out-of-body experience. And so cutting there can bring somebody back into reality. Or ironically, it can be a very self-soothing technique women that cut report that it grounds them. So the best answer to that would be that implication of those sympathetic and parasympathetic systems, that the person can't manage and can't get into some rhythm that's helpful for them.
Wow, I can imagine that if somebody were cutting and that was an intense feeling of self-soothing, they would need to really accept that other techniques could soothe them as well, but they might need to do a whole lot of it because...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and sadly, it's kind of like if one of those techniques are overdeveloped, such as bulimia or cutting, it is, they'll use that in response to any kind of low-level, you know, disruption in their system. So whenever you would see cutting in an individual, you have to consider that a really significant sign of stress and an absolute implication that this person is struggling and needs some professional help. So if you're a parent or a spouse and you see this in your child or spouse, it's a real big red flag.
Yes, I was just getting ready to mention, you know, support groups. I mean, somebody's cutting and, you know, I know that with eating disorders, there's just a lot of shame and I can imagine with cutting, people hide it and, you know, they could do their self-soothing exercises themselves, but somewhere in there they need a support group. What kind of techniques or groups or things do you try to get people to do after they leave the support group of the treatment unit?
Well, because our women are in residential treatment, and once you get to residential treatment, your struggles are significant. And very rarely is someone at the point after 90 days of residential treatment where they're simply ready to reintegrate in the world and have their problems be resolved. We really look at the 90 days that women spent here as the initial part of ongoing treatment. So it is rare that, and because all of our women struggle with chemical dependence, it is rare when we don't recommend either kinds of sober living or intensive outpatient programs. So ongoing treatment is absolutely necessary. The support system, for example, AA and NA and EDA, those are helpful in conjunction with ongoing treatment. And then there is a point when treatment does resolve, but you do need to still continue those supports. But anyone who's cutting or actively involved in behaviors that are not healthy, a support group alone is not going to provide them much of an opportunity for change.
Yes, I understand. It just seems like that I've had clients come to me that they've been to chemical abuse treatment, they've been to disorder treatment, and there's still something not happening for them. And so it's a matter of picking up the tools and really using those.
Right. And then it's a question of look at what other underlying issues are driving those behaviors. The most common issue that we find in women in treatment is trauma.
Right. And, you know, I was going to ask you, if somebody continues to cut or purge when they're in your program, I guess that's to be expected, right?
You know what? We don't support it, but we are not shocked by it. To really enter our particular program, someone has to demonstrate enough manageability over those cutting symptoms where they can ask for support from the staff. They are able to implement some very basic self-soothing techniques, seek out the help and support so that we can support them through one of those periods.
So that would be important for them to reach out. And if they
absolutely
did, and they went into a place where they kept the behavior secret,
right,
that wouldn't be a showstopper for their treatment. They would just
you know go. What? You know, and that really gets to be a hard, hard question. We try to work with individuals as long as we possibly can. And then there's always a point in treatment where an individual needs to make a decision about how they want to proceed. You know, if they're continuing to seek help and support, if we have good evidence that they're really trying to do something different, we'll work with them till the bitter end. But a woman who's not showing evidence that she's engaged in treatment and not showing evidence that she's interested in a listening support and doing something different, we may have to make a therapeutic decision that she needs either a higher level of care or that she's simply not interested in treatment.
Yeah, I've just met so many people that feel so hopeless. They feel right. that they have done everything.
Right.
This is where the combination of treatment methods and the time given to right. it. What is your average length of stay?
We are a 90-day program, so our length of stay is 90 days.
Wow, I guess it's hard for people to sort of leave their lives for 90 days to, but it's a life or death issue, isn't it?
Well, I gotta tell you, it is a life or death issue, and it's either, sometimes we think it's either 90 days now or, we see women who have been through so many treatment programs, and the amount of time they've spent in 28-day programs would make up for, four visits to the Women's Center. Likewise, but our 90 days is really based on real clinical research that says it takes about 90 days for the brain to start to rejuvenate and regenerate. And that one of the things that we see common in addiction is that in drug addicts and alcoholics, there's it gets a little technical, but there's a lack of dopamine receptors in the brain. And as long as there's a lack of dopamine receptors in the brain, until that part of the brain starts to show some healing, they are at high risk to fail and lapse and relapse during that first 90 days of recovery. So we want to make sure that our women get the best possible shot at brain healing. Also, 90 days gives us a lot of time to address the very same kinds of things that you brought up earlier, Rebecca. What is driving this behavior? What is causing my relapse over and over again? Is it the current relationships I keep and can't and don't want to, or I'm not able to change? Is it early family issues? Is it other issues such as a chronic depression or anxiety disorder that hasn't been treated properly? So we get the luxury over 90 days of time to really see the underlying issues that can support an addiction and an eating behavior.
When we come back from break, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the brain. But I was just wanting to go, I need to spend some time talking to you about that, and we're going to go ahead and go to break right
okay.
now, if that's okay. So
that's fine.
Call, listeners, if you want to call in, the number is 866-472-5792, or you can send me an email at rebecca@addictioninamerica.com.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
We all want peace. We all desire a more meaningful life. We work hard to achieve these things, but at what avail? The key is authentic living with Andrea Matthews. Andrea will interview some of the great spiritual experts of today and will provide wisdom to help you raise your consciousness to the level of your own I Am. Your authenticity can give you miraculous gifts, but you have to know how to get there. Listen for Authentic Living with Andrea Matthews. Heard live every Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Seventh Wave Network.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, thanks for rejoining us. This is Rebecca, and I'm still talking with Dr. Rito from Pine Grove, and she is the director of the Women's Dual Diagnosis Program, which treats eating disorders and chemical addiction. We're having a really good talk. I love this. I almost hate to go to break. So, you know, I was just wondering, there's something that you we were talking about brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. Something that you mentioned in a talk that I saw a while back, you were talking about a brain chemical called ghrelin. What is
a hormone? It's a hormone in the body. Uh-huh. And I know when you used to talk about brain stuff, it's like, you know, you had Ralph Carson on last week, Dr. Carson.
Right.
And now he is the brain guy.
No, I won't ask that. I won't ask
compared
that.
To his is not even comparable, but his book is a perfect adjunct to what we're talking about because he has the ability to explain these really complicated brain processes in a way that even I can understand. So that's where I get most of my brain knowledge is Dr. Carson and I work closely together here at the Women's Center. So he's a very big piece of what we do here as well. But back to ghrelin. Ghrelin, I really came across the knowledge of the ghrelin hormone when I was working with my gastric bypass patients. And one of the things that we found after gastric bypass is that levels of ghrelin are reduced. So what does this mean? Ghrelin is a hormone that the more you have of it, it actually has an effect on the reward system. It communicates reinforcing aspects of rewards, of natural rewards, such as food, also as addictive drugs and alcohol. So ghrelin is a hormone that exists all on its own, but we found that it really reinforces what we call the hedonic effect of certain foods, of reward things, such as food, and then falls into addictive drugs and ethanol. What we know is that dieters and eating disorders have a higher level of ghrelin than do people that don't struggle with those issues.
Is there a connection between ghrelin and chocolate?
You know what? If you've got because it affects that reward system and it reinforces aspects of what we call natural rewards, if you've got a high level of it, you may find chocolate much more rewarding than if you've got low levels of it.
Okay,
so there could be a direct communication to that. Also, we know that dieters and eating disorder women, you know, have longings for certain kinds of fear foods and foods that they tell themselves they cannot have. So there's all kinds of connections.
You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
I was wondering, what is a fear food?
You know, a fear food is something that for our eating disorder women causes absolute panic. So for a woman to eat potato chips or Mexican food, I mean, there's all kind of beliefs that she develops around the safety of eating these foods, the safety of not getting fat, the safety of it's going to cause me to binge. So we call these traditionally fear foods, those kinds of foods that an eating disorder woman will avoid at all cost.
There's so many issues of self tied up in eating, isn't there?
It's definitely one of those things that I've been, you know, in the field for any number of years and started learning about it back in the middle 80s. And it's truly one of those, the more I know, the more I don't know. And now that it's complicated by a co-occurring addiction or substance dependency issue, it's become even more fascinating to me.
You know, in that presentation that I saw, you said typically eating disorder women are much more resistant to giving up benefits of the eating disorder. Could you talk about that? What are the benefits that they don't want to give up?
You know, the function of an eating disorder is different for every single woman, but it's like one-stop shopping. I mean, it is a self-soothing behavior. It's a way to have a voice to things that you don't feel you have a voice to, for example, anger or direct communication. I always tell women that if you understand their eating disorder, you understand how they operate in the world. And so it does so much for women that it's one of the last things that they feel comfortable giving up and releasing. just because they've dealt with so many aspects of their lives through their eating disorder, they really don't know what to substitute it with. So it's in treatment, it's a constant, you build up with skills and conflict resolution and symptom resolution while you're encouraging them to drop off the behaviors that have really kept them afloat for many years. So for some women, it's as though you're taking away one of their biggest survival tools. What will I do in the world without it? I can't live. And so it's very resistant to treatment.
Yes, I can imagine the focus of the numbers of the weight, like I have to keep my weight down,
right.
I have to lose weight, that becomes such an obsession that shifting
right.
the focus would take some time. And that is what we talk about treatment resistance,
right.
Is shifting the mindset. But also, you mentioned earlier, if somebody has an underlying depression or anxiety or trauma, those things also have to be addressed.
Absolutely.
How do you address those in your program?
Well, you know what? We do psychological testing, again, over 90 days. And, you know, we spend all day with our women. And so they're in many, many groups. So the team really gets to know how a woman here psychologically functions. And so those things really just rise to the surface and are really easy to spot over the course of 90 days. So that in conjunction with testing, we work closely with our psychiatrist and our addictionologist. So there's lots of opportunities for observation and working with the women here. And as a result of that, those kinds of issues we can detect them rather easily.
In working with families, it seems like it would be really important when somebody gets discharged, they're going back to a family system perhaps.
Right.
How do you work with the families?
You know what? We work with the families throughout treatment. Every week we do family calls and contacts. We also have a week of treatment that's called Family Week that is really devoted to intense family workshops where the patient and the family kind of look at issues, look at where they need to go. And then the family work is something that is part of their aftercare. Many women need to do marital therapy. Young women that live with their families, family therapy is indicated. So family work is an ongoing thing that I think women struggle with when they leave here.
You know, talking about the family, a lot of times it's the family that sees the suffering and wants to do the intervention and notices that there's a problem, things that need to be dealt with. Is there, from your experience, much eating disorder intervention in the traditional sense that we do intervention?
You know, in the style of intervention that came from drug and alcohol use that was highly confrontive and we're going to throw you in the car and get you to treatment, not so much with eating disorders. And Rebecca, I'm preaching to the choir here because this is truly your specialty and you probably have more good feedback for me than I have for you. But really when you're working with an eating disorder woman and you're trying to get her into treatment, that idea of an intervention can work on any level. And for the families, it starts with knowledge about what's going on and it's opening up that dialogue with the person that you're concerned about. Here's what I see and here's what I think and we're going to try to get you some treatment. Now, in more complicated cases or people that need more help, that's exactly where you come in with your experience in terms of, I know a lot about this. I know how to make this process run smoothly, and I know how to do this in a way that's going to optimize our chances of getting this person in treatment.
Well, may I say that it's a bit of uncharted waters or territory because Dr. Carson and I were having a talk. He said we really need a specific technique for eating disorder intervention, so we can work on that.
Right.
But as far as what we think of as the surprise model, that just seems like it would be so difficult because of the shame of it all and you know, the secrecy of eating disorder, that would be like a secondary trauma to do that to somebody. So I really prefer that a systems approach be the approach that happens, and maybe a little bit more gradual. But, you know, that does bring up a question of how do people get to you? Do they come in through ERs or their therapists or their families?
You know what? We get our patients in any way you can think of. We just talked about interventions, and some come through interventions because, again, our women have dual diagnosis. At any given point, 50% of our women have a dual diagnosis of an eating disorder and chemical dependence, and then 50% are what we call straight chemical dependence, and that's their primary issue. So certainly we get people in through interventions. We get people in through word of mouth. We get people in through therapists who really are able to make that determination that outpatient treatment just isn't going to be enough to address these issues, that these issues are far too significant and severe to be managed on what we routinely do on a weekly outpatient basis.
Well, so
who has failed intensive outpatient treatment, chronic relapsers, those are some of the ways that people end up in treatment. Family concerns, certainly. And sometimes a lot of it is a woman is just, I'm done struggling. I need some help, and I can't do it on my own. So sometimes it's, you know, women have reached the point of sheer exhaustion and sometimes hopelessness, and that's when we see them in treatment.
And I would think the trappedness of, you know, many eating disorder people are high functioners, over functioners, perfectionistic, and to give all that up and just got to give it up, I'm going to die here, that would be a really hard step, but, you know, the surrender to win. You know?
That's it right there. And that's why when we're working with a dual diagnosis lady, they make that connection to the first step so seamlessly. It's like it really is about I cannot manage my life the way I'm managing it. And I'm trying to control every aspect of my life vis-a-vis my eating disorder, and it's not working, and I'm going down.
Well, I want to mention that we're going to mention again the Pine Grove helpline number, the call center. The number is 888-574-4673. That's 888-574-HOPE.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. We'll mention it again at the end of the show. So in terms of somebody coming in, I imagine that it takes them some time to acclimate to the unit and then get their, you know, kind of get introduced to the schedule of the unit. And
absolutely.
Right now, we're going to go ahead and go to break again. And I want to pick up with something very different than what we've talked about thus far. When we come back from break, I want to talk about bariatric surgery.
Ooh, that is another love of my life.
You're an expert in bariatric surgery, right? You know,
I am.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I want to hear some more about that when we come back. This is Rebecca with Addiction in America.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
If you have a loved one that is undergoing treatment for substance abuse or mental illness, you owe it to them and yourself to tune in to One Hour at a Time with host Mary Woods. This compassionate and educational talk show will help you help those that you love by better understanding their condition and their personal recovery process. Tune in every Monday at 12 noon Pacific time to One Hour at a Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Recovery begins this hour.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
So give me
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. This is Rebecca, and I am speaking with Dr. Kathy Rito, Pine Grove, and we left off talking about the treatment at Pine Grove, but I want to pick up by talking about bariatric surgery, which is one of your subspecialties that you know a lot about.
It was one of my early loves.
I personally don't know that much about bariatric surgery, and so, you know, there's an it seems like there would be an addictive component involved in that whole process of eating before someone makes a decision for the surgery. How does somebody usually come to the point where they want to have the surgery?
You know, usually that person is someone who has dieted and dieted and dieted over years and unsuccessfully. I mean, the reality is diets have a 1% success rate. That means diets have a 99% fail rate. So traditional dieting has not been a helpful tool for the morbidly obese.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do most people that have bariatric surgery, have they gone for other mental health treatment, do you find, or other treatment for food addiction?
Not necessarily. What we do know is that there's, you know, there's a whole disease of obesity, which is once someone gets to that very high weight, it takes such a restrictive process to lose weight, it's almost impossible to maintain. But what we do find is about 30 to 33% of people who present for bariatric surgery do have a formal eating disorder. And that eating disorder generally is in the form of a binge eating disorder.
Yes, and is that also, as we were speaking of earlier, is that a trauma related most likely for earlier life experience?
You know, it can be. And here's some of the exciting neurochemistry work that's come out now is really the neuroimaging and the neurobiological work that's coming out right now really supports a link that is most similar to addiction than, let's say, bulimia or especially anorexia of obese binge eaters. And that would be the group that would most likely fall into a bariatric surgery candidate. So the idea that there's a disruption in the reward center with dopamine, the evidence is most compelling with this group. So it may be that there is a real addictive component that's underlying or supporting someone's overeating.
So you mentioned dopamine and serotonin also tied in with this process?
You know, well, and serotonin does have an effect on appetite. Serotonin, when you think of serotonin, you think mood and anxiety, but serotonin also plays a role in reinforcing behavior. So it all kind of comes together in the end. When you think of reward center, that is most likely a dopamine center, a reward system.
Okay, all right. So, you know, I love that brain chemistry stuff. I know this goes back to, I need to finish reading The Brain Fix.
to read it over again.
You know, I was just wondering about what happens in the brain with the overeating disorder as opposed to, you know, like a bulimia. What's happening there? Is there a difference, a nuanced difference?
I think the nuanced difference is there may be more of a drive for eating in that obese binge eater than in the bulimic, where I think the bulimic symptoms are much more psychological in their genesis. There may definitely be a reward center component to the obese binge eater.
Okay. So what happens to a person emotionally after they have the bariatric surgery?
Well, that is a whole other phone interview because I have, you know, it can be quite a challenge because if this surgery is going to be successful, there absolutely needs to be a commitment to a lifestyle change, which that is the main thing I see most people struggle with after surgery, is that commitment to, I just can't have the surgery and go back to the same way I was leading my life.
Wow.
And that surrounds food choices, exercise habits, just that, you know, I'm gonna cook my food versus buy every meal through the takeout. So there's a lot of commitment to a lifestyle change that has to take place in conjunction if the surgery is going to be really successful. And the good news is many people are very successful at this surgery.
That's good to know. Again, like I said, I don't know that much about it. And I was wondering what happens to a person if the surgery goes, if their emotional eating, I'm going to call it emotional eating, doesn't correct after the surgery. What happens if the surgery goes poorly because they couldn't control their eating habits and they couldn't make that commitment?
Right. And usually we see that resurface several months after surgery, although what we see early on is people that don't aren't compliant with what we call their food plan. And not food plan, not in the traditional sense that when you think of a food plan with an eating disorder person, but through the course of gastric bypass surgery, they create a smaller stomach that we refer to as a pouch. And that pouch can only tolerate certain kinds of foods at certain stages of recovery. So there is an inherent meal plan that goes along with early postoperative recovery. And one of the big red flags is if someone can't be compliant in that first 6 months after surgery, it does not bode well for their success in the long term.
Is it possible that someone could gain that weight back,
and
it's as if the surgery didn't happen?
Yes, it absolutely is.
What is the difference between bariatric surgery and the lap band, may I ask?
You know, well, the bariatric surgery, the gastric bypass surgery, or what they call the Roux-en-Y surgery, is much more invasive. It's a surgical procedure that separates out a pouch of the stomach and leaves what we call the remnant kind of dormant in the system. A lap band is simply a silicone band that is tightened around the upper curvature of the stomach. And it really just creates a pouch by restriction, not a surgical incision and cutting off.
Okay, just a curiosity.
Mm-hmm. For me. And then the pouch or the band gets inflated and deflated with a saline to make the pouch more restrictive or less restrictive.
For centers that are doing the bariatric surgery, mm-hmm. do they have a follow-up plan? They want people like we would, you know, have a discharge plan after treatment. Is that an imperative part?
Well, I'll tell you what, right now, because so many people got on the bandwagon with doing bariatric surgeries, and sadly there's a lot of places that are doing bariatric surgery that have no business to be doing bariatric surgery, but what they do have now are places designated as centers of excellence. And for someone that's really interested in bariatric surgery, that's what you need to look for. Part of being a center of excellence is to have a follow-up program, support groups, psychological evaluation before the surgery, a psychological component to their ongoing treatment. So it's a really comprehensive program, and there are many, many excellent comprehensive programs out there right now.
Is that something that you treat in your program at Pine Grove, is people that are post-bariatric surgery that are having problems?
Well, you know, and that's interesting because we do, but not from the eating disorder perspective. What happens is, especially with gastric bypass, there are changes in physiology that makes that person more predisposed to substance dependence.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh.
And unlike, you know, Oprah did a show a while back that said, you know, that kind of cross addiction, well, if they take their food away, they're going to automatically go to something else. We don't really see that as much as the changes that happen after surgery from a physiological place. So after surgery, the standard kind of idea is that if I have one drink, and that bariatric patient has the same drink I do, it's going to show up in their blood level 3 times higher than mine.
Wow, and that could turn into some really serious, serious problems. And I would love to keep talking about this, but we have to go ahead and close.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, for people that are struggling with anything that we've talked about today, the Pine Grove call center number is 1-888-574-4673. That's 1-888-574-HOPE. And I'm sure that you can direct people to any kind of treatment that they may need.
Absolutely. And if they tell the person on the call center that they heard our show, and I'd be happy to talk to them personally.
Great. Okay, and that would be Ask for Dr. Kathy Rito. Absolutely. Well, this is Rebecca Bullion, and this has been another wonderful show. I've enjoyed talking to you so much. I appreciate your time in being here with us. And anybody that would like to send an email to me, that would be Rebecca@addictioninamerica.com. Take care. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Addiction in America. Please join Rebecca Bullion again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, and 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until our next program, have a good week, and may you be one step closer to conquering your addiction.
I'm having a hard time just trying to understand all the suffering, the misery that man goes through.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.